What's happening, family, and welcome to the podcast In the Black of My Mind. I'm your host, Al Thomas. So, settle in, get your favorite libation and maybe something quick to eat, and then sit down and check this out. But I need you to do me a favor, and that's go down to the bottom of the page and click subscribe, click a like and comment and share this with everybody. How many bodies? Everybody. Share this with everybody. Today's guest is an amazing musician, composer, and has recorded and or performed with a number of world-class musicians, including Michael McDonald, Roberta Flack, Jonathan Butler, Keiko Matsui, Johnny Gill, Jeffrey Osborne, Sheila E., Marcus Miller, Will Downing, Earl Klug, Jeff Lorber, Peter White, Peebo Bryson, just to name a few. He's a professor at the world-renowned Berklee School of Music. He's the executive producer and host of the Barbados Jazz Excursion. He's a philanthropist and the founder of the Never Lose Drive Foundation. Welcome to the podcast, Ilan Trotman. How you feeling, good brother?
Doing good, Al, man. Thanks for having me.
Man, thanks for agreeing to do this. Congratulations are in order for the number one spot on the Billboard charts for the single Running Hot.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
it. Please, you've been grinding, man, and you earned that, man. Ain't nobody give you nothing.
Yeah, a lot of hard work, man. So just enjoying it, man. Just celebrating. We are number one again this week, so 2 weeks in a row.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, man. Congratulations. Now, I understand you were born born and raised in Barbados.
Yeah, that's right. I'm an island boy, man.
Yeah, sure. Bajan.
Bajan.
Yeah. That's the first island I ever went to, too, man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, I love that place, man. Please. Man, I went over there, went to DMV, got me a driver's license, rented one of them little mini mokes and drove over the whole island and stuff, man. I had a ball. Can't wait to go back, too. Family, brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I got two sisters. They're back home. One of them, she's a doctor. She's in the medical field. And
oh, wow.
So she's, down there doing her service, man.
Nice.
My pops is still there, too. He's retired. Yeah, man, just trying to outrun Father Time.
Well, hey, they say Father Time is undefeated, man. So, you know, do what you can do and while you can do what you can do. Keep it moving. Any of your family involved in music?
No. Actually, I was kind of the first to pursue it, at the college level and then professionally. My dad both dibbled and dabbled, there's always somebody singing around the house or mm-hmm. there's always mm-hmm. music playing around the house. There was a guitar laying around sometimes. If not, my dad, my grandfather, he had acoustic guitar laying around. So I was kind of always exposed to it, but nobody actually pursued it on a professional level other than myself.
Mm-hmm. When did you start playing music?
My parents got me into piano lessons when I was around 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I started to take piano lessons. And then once I got to middle school, I got introduced to a different band instrument. So sax wasn't actually my first band instrument. The only thing that was available at the time were brass instruments.
So oh, okay.
I spent a few months playing the tuba, euphonium, or baritone, as well as the French horn.
Mm.
So that was kind of like my first introduction to band instruments and playing in a band setting. And then I was able to get my hands on a saxophone eventually.
Nice. Played in local bands in Barbados. What's the music scene like down there anyway?
Yeah, so, it's very easy to get hired by some of the resorts because tourism is main source of income for the economy. So there's many resorts, as many beaches, but there's also a lot of live entertainment on a nightly basis in many of the resorts.
Hmm.
So I was able to get some opportunities to perform either solo sax or in small band settings, and kind of, get some experience in performing as a teenager. And as a result, I was able to get booked for, other opportunities, whether it be, corporate gigs or at churches.
Oh,
And
nice.
yeah, I did pretty good, man. I was able to put together a band with some childhood friends, and we got nominated for, the Barbados Music Awards, and
Oh, wow.
performed at a bunch of festivals, on the island. So it was, definitely a big part of my trajectory as far as kind of deciding that I wanted to pursue music, full time as a career, and kind of inspired me to check out Berkeley.
Oh, cool. I not because that was one of my questions. What made you decide to go to Berkeley?
So there's actually a few Berkeley alum that are from Barbados that came back to the island, and most of them ended up in education. One of them ended up being my mentor. He was a fellow saxophonist, and he had toured with Maxi Priest and Roberta Flack. So he was able to prep me for Berkeley as far as getting ready for the audition process, and to kind of ensure that I was able to, get financial aid. I got a full scholarship from the government of Barbados.
Oh, wow.
So it was a blessing, because even though it's way less expensive than it is now, but it was still not cheap,
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So I'm grateful for that.
How'd you get started playing professionally? Excuse me.
So, like I said, even before I finished high school, and even before I came up to Boston to attend Berkeley, I was getting compensated for performing. So I feel like I kind of already had gotten a taste of what it's like to just, build your brand and, know your worth and understand the ins and outs of the business to some degree, but obviously once I became a student at Berkeley, and it's a bigger market, more competitive, when you talk about, coming up to the United States, Massachusetts, Boston, many music schools, many colleges and universities, many musicians, established musicians, many bands. So that's when I kind of had to reassess my strategy as far as where I want to exist, as far as my musical identity. And I was able to get a few resident gigs at some local restaurants. And it was like starting from scratch, because Barbados, everybody kind of knows you, but coming to a big city where nobody knows you, you kind of have to pay your dues and put the time in order to build your brand on a local level before you can even think about doing it on a regional level. Before I was even able to get gigs in Rhode Island or Connecticut or New York, I really had to build my brand. It took years to really, it was funny, is Walter Beasley, he was the cat when I was a student at Berkeley, Walt. And then there was another guy named Andre Ward, who's in education now. But Andre and Walter were like the cats when we talk about saxophone players in the Boston area. And I would call Walter up and, kind of pick his brain, and like, what how you how do I get it, man? How do I get my music on the radio? How do I get booked for festivals? How do I get booked for clubs? And I'd keep bugging him, and eventually he would come up off with some information and put it out there, lay it out for me to play it out, and I gotta go figure it out. Nothing's is given to you. You gotta earn it. And I learned that quickly, because once you start coming up as the next in line, the cats that have been there before you, they kind of don't necessarily get intimidated, but they try to protect their territory,
See these young guns coming up here, and wild, wild west. You had you been to Massachusetts prior to going to school up there?
No, I've never been to Massachusetts. I've been to New York a few times. I've been to Florida, but I've never been to Massachusetts.
The reason I ask that, because I'm sure it had to been culture shock when you got up there.
Times two, because I started in the spring of '98. So I remember coming to Boston on a cold winter day. It was January of 1998, and it was probably about 30 degrees outside. There was
Oh, that's a warm day.
snow. It was snow on the ground. My dad, I remember my dad, he had nosebleed because, it was so cold. We were coming straight from 90 degrees to,
Wow.
to freezing temperatures. And yeah, for sure, a definite culture shock, in more ways than one, just being, just figuring out how to conduct yourself in a way that people respect you. A lot of people are not educated about the Caribbean, especially small islands like Barbados. So people will come up to me and ask me, like, "Oh, do you speak English in Barbados? You have electricity?"
Yeah, right. You have running water.
Yeah, man. So it's like,
Wow.
it took a while to just kind of, get people to get them educated on, Barbados has one of the highest literacy rates in the world. It's like
Wow.
97% literacy rate. We speak the
Wow.
queen. We speak the Queen's English, man.
Okay, right.
So yeah, once I got here, just understanding that it's competitive. There's back in Barbados, I probably one out of three or four phenomenal, young saxophone players. Whereas you come to Boston and Berkeley, at that time, Berkeley was kind of strict with who they accepted. So there was all scholarship students, all some or prodigies that are all entering at the same time. So it's humbling too, because there's cats that went to performing arts high schools that have been listening to Coltrane and Charlie Parker since they was 14, 15 years old.
Wow,
And
right.
I didn't have those resources coming up in the Caribbean. I could hear a little Grover Washington or a little Kenny G or a little Najee from time to time on, MTV music videos or whatever, but I wasn't exposed to the, straight ahead and bebop. So come up here and I hear these guys that are my age, playing Charlie Parker and just killing it.
Wow.
It's very humbling. It was humbling, man. And that's what drove me to put more work in and to practice and to go out and buy records, listen to Kind of Blue, Giant Steps, and educate myself about jazz, not just contemporary jazz, but the history of jazz and the origins of jazz.
So how'd you get on?
I attribute it to the late great Mr. Fred Taylor. Fred Taylor was one of the main promoters, talent buyers in the Boston area. So Paul's Mall and a lot of the older venues in Boston that Miles Davis and a lot of the internationally known jazz artists would come to Boston. Fred was the person that was responsible for booking them.
Oh, okay.
And he also was a talent buyer for Sculler's Jazz Club. And he took a chance on me. I think before he booked me at Sculler's, he gave me a chance to open up for Jonathan Butler at this big black tie event we do in Boston called Stepping Out. And I opened up for Jonathan Butler. As a result, Jonathan Butler called me up to do a summer tour with him. He
Oh,
did a
wow.
summer tour every year, and it was myself, Jonathan Butler, and Sheila E. So that was kind of like my big break. So again, I credit Fred Taylor for kind of taking a chance on me. And then I would play at Sculler's, once or twice a year. And I ended up getting booked on the Beantown Jazz Festival, which is a festival that Berkeley put on in the city of Boston, a free outdoor concert. And like I said, from there I started to get some traction on a local level, and eventually I started to get phone calls from Rhode Island clubs and festivals, Connecticut, and I played Greater Hartford Jazz Festival a bunch of times. I played Lyman Center in New Haven. A lot of radio stations and a lot of events in Southern Connecticut as well. So yeah, I started to see, the work, the fruits of my labor spilling over from Massachusetts to other surrounding states. And eventually, next thing I knew, I was doing festivals out in California and Arizona and Las Vegas and
Nice.
Florida.
Yeah. And then you became the man.
Well, another person that opened some doors for me is Dave Koz. When Dave Koz calls
Oh,
you,
wow. Yeah.
a lot of things happen because his cruises usually have 20 to 30 artists, 7-day cruise. I've done three of them. One went to Spain, France, Italy. He
Oh,
asked me
nice.
to play saxophone with Michael McDonald. He asked me to play sax with Sheila E. and Jonathan Butler and Marcus Miller. So, you know,
Wow.
I it opened up a lot of doors for me when you get into playing in front of, you know, a lot of heavy hitters, and you're the cat. Everybody's talking about you. This is the next, you know, this is the young cat. He's the next in line, blah blah blah. So it all happened very quickly, man. Then Peter White called me to do a European tour with him. I did some shows with him in London,
Nice.
and at that time I was teaching in the Boston Public Schools, and the dates were like in November. It's like a few weeks into the school year, or October, and I ended up telling my principal. I said, "Listen, I got an opportunity to do a 2-week tour, and obviously that's gonna be it's not gonna be fair to the families and the students." So I said, "You know, in all fairness, I think I need to take a little hiatus, a little sabbatical, and kind of test out this full-time music thing, touring and traveling." And I put out an album, and it all kind of happened simultaneously. And next thing you know, yeah, I'm getting phone calls to go on tour, to do festivals, to play clubs, and getting some radio airplay as well.
Wow. Any memorable tours?
For sure. The cruises are fun, man. Like I said, I've done the smooth jazz cruise a couple times. I got to play with Marcus Miller and David Sanborn. I got to do the Capital Jazz Cruise. I got to play with Johnny Gill, Peebo Bryson, Jeff Lorber, Will Downing. And then the Dave Koz Cruise, that one, I got to play with Michael McDonald, Sheila E. So honestly, I got so many memorable moments. There's not one in particular that jumps out at me, but the first artist, notable artist that I got to play with was Roberta Flack.
Oh,
So,
wow. Nice.
you know, I'm like 23 years old, and here I am playing alongside her, you know, and the songs that I heard on the radio growing up as a teenager, you know, Feel Like Making Love, Killing Me Softly, you know, Back Together Again, all the Donny duets. And here I am on stage, like watching her perform them right in front of my very eyes. That was full circle. That was probably the most memorable, because it was the first time that, you know, you play a song with an artist who you've idolized, and you heard their music on the radio growing up, and you're like, oh, okay, everybody knows that song, Strolling in the Park. Man, you're like 5 feet from the person's on
Oh,
stage. It's
man.
crazy.
How'd you get into teaching? Excuse me.
So I knew I was going to do education once I decided to go to Berkeley, because I've always been very cautious with, you know, my decision making as far as my future, you know, my just well-being. And you know, a lot of people advise me to not do performance just because it's so fluid as far as the touring. You know, you can tour for 4 months, and then you can be off for 4 months, you know. So all of my mentors, they kind of advised me to, you know, have a plan B, have a fallback. And you know, I said, you know what, if I can get certified as an educator to teach, you know, a license to teach in Massachusetts, I can still gig, I can still, you know, travel on the weekends if needed, but I know I got my benefits, and I get the summer off too. So that's what, you know, kind of made me decide to pursue education, just for the security. And then, you know, obviously I fell in love with it, because it takes a special gift to have the patience to be an educator, and to you know, especially at the lower level. I did kindergarten through fifth grade
Oh,
for many
wow.
years.
You're a
Yeah,
better man
so
than me. I couldn't do it.
I was teaching the little ones, man, teaching them how to play the recorder and
Oh, yeah.
read, you know, just basic notation and how to read music and rhythms.
Mm.
And eventually, transitioned to middle school and then did some high school stuff as well. But, it came naturally for me. I always hear my students say, there's great musicians, but all of them aren't great teachers, So
Right.
for me, it came naturally. Like I feel like I have a gift, as far as being able to explain things in an easy and efficient way. And for that reason, I've been teaching for the last 20 years. I've been teaching at the college level for the last 4 years.
How did the pandemic affect you and you personally and you your music?
So one positive that came out of it was that I started to write. So I wrote about 10 songs, which eventually got released on an album called Brighter Days Ahead. So Brighter Days is the title track. It's 10 songs on there. I was able to collaborate with over six artists, all remotely. They all recorded in their home studios. I got Julian Vaughn on there. I got Jeff Bradshaw, I think, is on there. Alpea
Jeff.
Renee. Patches Stewart from the Marcus Miller Band is on
Oh
there.
yeah.
Adam Holly. So that's one positive because it forced me to stay busy and be creative and to kind of use that negative energy and that hurt to turn it into something positive, something beautiful, hence the title track, Brighter Days Ahead. And there's another beautiful song on the album called Prayer for Humanity, which it just came from a place of compassion, for everything that was happening around us at that time. I focused on my fitness. I was exercising a lot. I picked up riding. Marion Meadows got me into cycling, so went
Did
out, bought
have
a
you been out
homemade
riding with
bike.
him?
No, we've never ridden together, but
Oh,
he
okay.
got me buttoned up with my bike and my helmet and my gear and all that stuff.
Nice,
And
nice.
I worked my way up to the century, man. I did a couple 50-mile rides, and then I
Really?
went for the century. I got one century.
Oh no. Bruh, if I get 100 in a week, I'm talking junk. Dang.
Well, 100 miles is nothing for those guys because
Oh,
they were
I
going
know.
like 20, 20, 25 miles an hour.
Man, no. I bought a bike during the pandemic. And I was talking junk to Marion, and he said, "Well, he's coming. I'm coming to Connecticut, man. It's like I get you to go out with me and stretch your legs a little bit." No, I'm not going with you,
You get
man.
smoked, man. You
Oh
get
man,
dropped.
please, yeah, exactly. No,
You get
I'm
dropped
good.
real
I'm
quick.
good. Oh man.
But yeah, I focused on my fitness. Like I said, I got into art. I did some painting. I ended up having an art exhibit in Boston. I had some
Oh
pieces
wow.
that I collected over a few months, and people purchased some of them. So that was
Oh
cool. But
nice. Nice,
yeah.
nice. And that's something I've always wanted to do, but when it comes to the fine arts, I'm more autistic than artistic, so it's it ain't a good look, bruh. It ain't a good look.
It's all good, man.
How's your golf game?
Golf game is holding steady. That kept me busy during the pandemic as well. That's one of the few activities that that we could do outside.
Right. What's your handicap?
I think last I checked out was a 5.8
Okay.
index, about a
Okay.
six handicap.
Yeah, that works.
I have my tournament on October 4th in Boston, and I raised some money to get a new program started. We got a new after-school instrumental program. We're going to be partnering with the Boys and Girls Clubs of Dorchester,
Oh,
starting
nice.
next week, actually.
Nice.
So yeah, I got to play. I think I shot an 82 or 83 in that tournament. I had two different divisions. One division for teams, scramble for the lower, for the higher handicappers, the amateur golfers, and then I had
For
an
me.
individual. And yeah, it's all good. Then I had an individual flight, and I had a couple retired pro athletes came up for that. John Starks came up from
Right.
Stanford,
Yeah, that's my man, John.
and Dana Barros from the Celtics. He played.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. So it was a good time.
Yeah, I ran John's basketball camp years ago down in Westchester County and stuff. So I got to know him pretty good during that period of time. I used
Yeah,
to.
he's a good brother, man. His
Oh
foundation, they do a lot of stuff with college students and scholarships. I played in his tournament a few times in Westchester.
I would have played in yours. I didn't find out about it until like day before yesterday when I was doing some research on you and stuff. I saw that you were doing. I was like, man, had I known, I'd have put a team in there because me and my boys we'd have came up. But
Oh,
so
okay.
I'll know from now and on to look out and stuff. And I see you doing the Barbados Jazz excursion and stuff, and you got the golf down there as well.
Yeah, we've been doing that for about 8 years, and we've been doing the Martha's Vineyard event for about 4 years. I didn't do Barbados this year. It was supposed to be, usually it's Columbus Day weekend. So we held off on doing that this year. Try to regroup and see how things are looking for next year. But for me, it's a big opportunity to contribute to the charity, to the foundation, because I have a program in Barbados as well. We got some kids down there that are doing music lessons on a weekly basis, and they get to perform during the festival. We get to obviously do some fundraising stuff with the golf tournament and the celebrities. I've had Jeffrey Osborne, I've had Mesa, I've had Najee, I've had Will Downing, Norman Brown, Peter White, Avery Sunshine, and I even had some comedians too. I had Chris Spencer last year, and I had Damon Williams before that. So hopefully we'll bring it back next year.
But if you, I'm when I found out, I was like, oh yeah, I need to do this because that might be, yeah, as I said, I want to go back down to Barbados. If I can bring the sticks down there and hang out, I'm good.
Sure.
It was crazy, man. As I retired in 2020, I retired April Fool's Day 2020, right? That's my official date. But they sent us home March 10th because of the pandemic. So I figured, well, we'd be out for a couple of days, we'll be back. Well, I never went back, and I wasn't able to go and clean out my office until like September. Because they were doing everything virtually during that period of time. And then during that period of time, they only gave me like an hour to come in and clean out my office. Now, I've been in higher education for 35 years. So, all the stuff from my travels from Africa and Korea and all this stuff, man, all over the Caribbean. I got stuff and paintings and sculptures and all kinds of stuff in there. I got 1 hour to take that stuff out, man. So it was crazy. But, it is what it is, man. During that, it was kind of frightening times during that period of time. So,
Oh yeah, man.
and we
I got
lost
it four
so many.
times, dude.
I'm sorry.
I said I got hit with COVID four times, man.
Really? Four
Yeah.
times. Dang. So I can't complain. I had it twice, but four times. Dang. I got some rapid fire questions. What are your hobbies?
The gym. Watching Netflix, watching series or movies on Netflix, golf, fishing.
Okay. What is the greatest accomplishment of your life to this point?
Oh man. Ah man, that's tough, man. It's tough to pick just one moment, but graduating from college is a feat that can't be taken away from you,
Oh, no doubt.
so I celebrate that. I celebrate that every day. And then being able to be the founder of a nonprofit organization that has given back, in more ways than one to education, especially with the arts. Again, I take pride in that. Nobody can take that away from me.
Oh, no
Even
doubt.
if I were to stop today, I've already, given back. I've already paid it forward. And for me, that's the most rewarding thing that you could ever ask for, is to feel like you've done something positive with, like the saying says, to whom much is given,
Much is required, no doubt. and crossing them burning sands and stuff. And
Hey, you know what? Being the bros is something that I celebrate every day, man. Like I
no
said,
doubt.
so many special things that I've been able to accomplish and to be a part of. Every time I get together with the bros is always a blessing, man. I get to
Oh,
travel a
truly.
lot, and I celebrate that, so for sure.
Truly. What's on your bucket list?
I was talking to somebody today about, all the Grammy nominations just came out a few days ago, and I told him, I said, that's on my bucket list. I
Okay.
want to be Grammy nominated in the next 2 or 3 years.
That's what I'm talking
I'd
about.
also I'd also like to perform at the Newport Jazz Festival, Newport, Rhode Island, New Orleans Jazz Fest, and the Hollywood Bowl.
A Hollywood Bowl. Wow.
Those are three of my bucket list venues.
Nice. Nice. What skill would you most like to learn?
probably business management.
That's important right now.
I've always had a phobia for numbers and bookkeeping, and I'm kind of self-taught. For many years I didn't have a manager or an agent, so I've learned how to survive, get things done. But it's nice to know that you have the educational foundation in this world. In the entertainment field, you have to understand the business. Now, it's so hard to keep up with everything. Everything's constantly changing, whether it's the streaming revenue, Spotify or Pandora, and YouTube monetization, TikTok. Now you got AI. It's like, but it all points back to, to revenue and how to survive and put food on your table and your family's table with all of these new things that are being introduced. Cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. I looked at Bitcoin today, is back up to like 80 something thousand dollars. I kind of forgot about Bitcoin, and I sold mine because it was trash. It was like 30,000 a share, and sure enough, man, now it's back up. They said it might hit 100,000. So like, just being able to educate myself on certain things, and to be able to have conversations with people, learn from other people about life and people's strengths, just we all learn from each other.
Where's the coolest place you traveled to play a gig?
I love Cape Town, South Africa. Been there three
Wow.
times. And also love Jakarta, Indonesia. Played at the Java Jazz Festival
Oh,
twice.
nice.
So definitely those two. Obviously, growing up on an island, there's not many other tropical places that do anything for me, because I grew up seeing white sands and blue waters all my life, 85 degrees all year round. So
Oh, yeah, see, it's a beautiful thing.
I like New Orleans, man. Something about New Orleans, just the vibe, man. You get off the plane, and the culture, the food, the history, Bourbon Street. I love that. So it's one of my favorite cities.
Who is your hero?
I guess I would say my mentor, my saxophone mentor, Arturo. Because I just, he has such a big impact on my life. And up until when I was 16, 17, I idolized him. When you see me wearing fedoras and sunglasses and nice blazers, it's much in part to him, because I kind of model myself after him and his fashions. The way he carried himself on stage, his bodily movements, facial expressions, a lot of it I studied him from a very young age. And I would yeah I would say he's my hero.
Cool. What is the most important decision that you've made to date?
Most important decision I've made to date. Man, that's a tough question. That's a tough question. Well, I think just taking care of my body, my mind and my body. So I became a pescatarian about almost a year ago. I decided to stop eating meat. And I used to love me some wings, man, some barbecue wings.
Exactly.
So just being able to conquer that desire, that craving, and to now be able to be around, to go to a restaurant and see people eating some nice honey glazed wings or whatever, and to not have that desire, I feel like in a lot of ways, making that decision allowed me to have control over other things in my life. So, certain addictions and certain things that we have that control us or that we can't seem to conquer, I feel like by making that decision to not eat meat and to only eat fish, and also, I was just more aware of what I was putting into my body, as far as processed foods and sugar. When I drink coffee, I've been drinking black coffee for the last 4 years, no sugar, and no sweeteners. And same thing with snacks, trying to be mindful of the sugar content. So that's the best decision I've made. Try give myself a chance to be on this planet a little longer, by taking care of my temple.
The last podcast I did, my brother on there was saying that he was vegan and stuff. And I was saying, yeah, I was vegan all day once. I can't do it, man. Well, you know what? And as I was saying, sharing with him, I don't have to eat beef. I could do away with beef. I could do away with pork, but that chicken, though, man, that's a tough one
Bros,
for a
the
brother,
bros like
man.
that chicken,
Yeah,
man.
man, you know how we do, man. You know how we do.
Everything in moderation, man.
Right,
Everything in
right. That
moderation.
this is true. What's your favorite song? And not the song that you wrote, but what's your favorite song?
So right now on my gym playlist, I'm actually sitting outside the gym right now. There's a song from Kanye West's gospel album that I constantly have on repeat. I think I don't even know the name of it, man, but it's a very uplifting song. And I'll listen to that 5 or 6 times back to back to back to back.
Nice. Yeah, I like what he's doing with that group, that ensemble or whatever. It's kind of interesting.
I'm kind of picky with the music that I listen to. It's just I'm very selective, I'll say that. Like,
Is that
yeah, I'm very selective with the music that I put in my ears.
Okay. I'm sure there's a rhyme to the reason to the rhyme.
Yeah, a lot of it is, just me being true to, what I consider to be real music, real artists, no tricks and gimmicks, real talent, real instruments, songs with a positive message. So yeah, I'm very
Songs
selective,
with a
man.
bridge.
Yeah, exactly. Not two chord songs.
Songs with a bridge is interesting because I was listening to somebody's podcast the other day, and that's what they were talking about, the fact that some of these young brothers and sisters are coming out with these songs and stuff, and they don't have any bridges. It's just like they come up with a beat, and the beat is good, and we just ride it out, and we ain't putting no bridge. That's it. It's like, for real, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, you listen to those songs from the 70s and 80s, man. It's got a powerful message. The lyrics, speak to you. You feel like the song was written for you. But then you got the bridge or key change or something, you know.
Right. Modulation, something. Give me
Exactly.
something, man. No, I don't know. Hopefully, so well, you up there educating some of these young brothers and sisters, man, and hopefully they'll go out and educate some more of these young brothers and sisters and get us back on track.
That's all I can do, man, is and plant the seeds, and
Exactly.
hopefully
Exactly.
they water them and nurture them, because there's some talented artists and songwriters out there. I saw Bruno Mars in Las Vegas back in September, and that was probably the best live show I've ever seen as far as execution, stage presence, just production. It's just a talented brother, man. Talented individual. No tricks and gimmicks. He did a little unplugged set within the show where he just sat on the piano, and just him and the piano singing and doing some of the songs acoustically. And he kind of took the audience on a journey of how his career started, from the first song he ever wrote. And so those are the artists that I really respect, because they're staying true to the art of songwriting and the art of performing. The bar was set with Michael Jackson. For me, that's the epitome when we talk about, a performer, a consummate performer. He had the whole package,
Oh, definitely.
vocally, choreography, everything. And there's some guys that have kind of fed off of that, like Usher and Justin Timberlake and Bruno Mars. For me, those are the guys that embody everything that Michael represented.
Who is your favorite instrumentalist? I was gonna ask saxophone, but I was like, nah, I'm a widen it so.
Oh man. Well, when people ask me about music, it's hard for me to summarize it into one generation, because I feel like there's different highlights from different generations as far as when we talk about artists, from different time periods. So for example, obviously John Coltrane for me was kind of breaking barriers and boundaries musically, defying,
Truly.
the limitations of the instrument. He was doing stuff that nobody else was doing during that time period. And then Michael Brecker is another saxophone player who I consider to be one of the greatest of all time. Just again, doing things on the instrument that no one else was doing at that time. And
Man, also took the wind controller to another level too.
yeah, the iwi. Yeah, he did a lot of stuff for the iwi as well. And but modern day, if we talk about saxophone players, Kirk Whalum
Kurt.
is to me the most musical, melodic, vocal sound you could ever hear on a saxophone, man. He just sings through his instrument.
Definitely. Yeah, that's probably of the modern days. It's been, I'm sure that's my favorite as well. Definitely. The last of the quick hitters, and it might be the most difficult of all. Tell me your life story in one sentence.
Still trying to figure it out.
That would be me, and I'm 66, bruh. I'm still trying to
Trying
figure it out.
to figure out this thing we call life, man, you
Yeah,
know?
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Some days we do better, some days we're like, damn, I wish I could do that again.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't get the redos. We got no rollover minutes in life and none of that kind of stuff. So, how can people contact you on social media?
I use mostly Instagram. My Facebook was compromised recently, but I started a new page. So everything's under Elon Trotman, Instagram, Facebook. Don't use Twitter that much. And then my website, elontrotman.com, will have all of the links to take you to, the different events that I host: Barbados, Martha's Vineyard, and the nonprofit as well.
Cool. And speaking of which, can you tell folks a little bit about your foundation?
Sure. Yeah, the Never Lose Your Drive Foundation Incorporated is 501c3. We have two programs that we're currently running. One of them is based in Barbados. We have about 30 students, middle school age, and they're getting weekly instruction on saxophone, flute, trumpet, clarinet, and percussion. And we're launching Head Start Music in Boston next week, November 18th, with the Dorchester Boys and Girls Club. And we are also going to be offering saxophone, flute, clarinet, trumpet, trombone, and percussion every Monday evening to middle school students. So the jazz and golf events that I do are a way to for us to educate people on, the give back, as well as to raise some funds with, the celebrities and the jazz festivals. So it's two things that I love: music and golf and education. Three things all come together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. Look, bro, I know you're busy, man, and so I'm not trying to compromise your day and stuff, man. I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and I'm definitely going to check you out, man, with some of these tournaments and stuff. And if you're ever in Connecticut, man, and you want to play some golf, give me a call. I got you, man.
Okay, will
I
do.
got you when you get here and stuff, no doubt.
All right,
All right,
looking
brother.
forward to it.
No doubt. Well, you enjoy the holidays and stuff. Are you playing Marion's Christmas party this year?
I'm gonna link with him and see if the date works for me, because my
Okay.
December's starting to fill up. Yeah.
Right. I hear. Cool. If you are, then I'll probably see you there. But
Okay.
not I got numbers now, so I'm gonna wear out my welcome, brother.
Anytime, man. Just a phone call away.
No doubt. All right, bro. Well, you be strong, man. And thanks again. I appreciate you.
All right, thank you for this platform that you've created for us to share and fellowship, man. So thank you.
No, man, I appreciate you. All
All
right.
right, take care.
This has been another episode of In the Black of My Mind podcast. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, and share. Until next week, y'all be blessed.